You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In a new book called Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality, Jacob Tomsky draws on more than a decade of job experience to reveal the inner workings of the hospitality business, including how you can get minibar snacks free and why you should ever be rude to the front desk clerk. It's published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased that it brings Jacob Tomsky to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And we invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. If you have a question about what goes on behind the scenes at hotels or have a hotel story that you'd like to share, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Now, Jacob, weren't you a philosophy major in college?
Absolutely.
Was that good preparation for working in the hotel business?
Perhaps learning to understand human nature and how to gauge people quickly and understand what they're looking for out of life and serve them properly. But other than that, rather useless.
So you thought you were going to become an academic?
That was my family asked that same question. What exactly are you doing here with this degree? I was just studying something. I felt if I was going to go to college, I wanted to study something I enjoyed.
So how did you wind up in the hotel business?
Well, I was parking cars at a restaurant, and I heard about a new luxury hotel opening. It was in New Orleans at the time. And they were hiring valet parkers, and that began my 10-year career.
Is this something we should know about valet parkers? What happens when we give them the keys to our car and see them zoom off?
Yeah, indeed. No, what they'll do is they'll pull off at 5 miles an hour, and then once they get to level two, that's when they start zooming. It's, you know, oftentimes valet parkers are, they might not even work for the hotel proper. And, you know, they're clandestine people and they may, you know, there's a lot of turnover in that job. So, you know, I was witness to people, you know, taking change out of cars, just like little tiny thieveries, you know, scratching here and there and not mentioning it. So a lot goes on in your vehicle. That's your private space and you got a stranger in there.
And they're scratching it just for the sheer joy of messing you up?
I'm sure, you know, there's all kinds of people out there, but, you know, just you scrape it or going around a corner and you just pretend you didn't hear it. And then, you know, you don't report it.
You have changed everyone's name in your book, including your own, to protect the guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like I needed a little distance. I was going to go deep with this book. So I felt like, you know what? Let me change my own name, too.
What about the stories so that people would be less recognizable?
Yeah, I think, you know, a hotel is a hotel is a hotel. And, you know, so there's some amalgams. And, you know, stories that I've heard and stories that I've witnessed and all crazy guest stuff. And, you know, I just wanted to put it all together.
Now, you started working in a luxury hotel in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. New Orleans is not your typical American city. So was your experience typical?
No. I mean, you had some celebrity guests, but it was a more laid back environment. Obviously, Mardi Gras, you know, that's wild for that city. It's a big tourist event. So the clientele and the things they do during Mardi Gras are going to be amplified like you wouldn't believe. But yeah, it's a wonderful city and to work there. I feel honored.
And you feel, judging from the book, you sound like you kind of miss it, but you came to New York anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I grew up a military family, so I moved around a lot, and I felt like I just couldn't stop. So, and I'd never been to New York, so about, you know, 7, 8 years moved here.
And what was the big change, New Orleans to New York?
Actually, it was to focus on my writing. You know, I was getting promoted in the hotel business, and, you know, I've been writing my whole life, and I wanted to take some time to move to Paris and then...
And was the experience in the New York hotels different from the one
absolutely.
In New Orleans?
Yeah, couldn't have been more different. You know, it's all about money here, a lot of celebrities, now serious business travelers. I just became a hustler at the end and just everything's faster.
But you're talking about luxury hotels.
Yeah. Well, when I started, it was...
Modest hotels don't get too many celebrities.
Sure. When I started, it was a little run down, and then it went through this renovation and came out the other end as like a luxury property.
This is the hotel you have renamed the Bellevue.
The Bellevue, yeah.
The ownership changed while you were there.
Yes.
Is that when it was upgraded?
Yes, and that's when everything went bad because it was kind of a money... It became a money situation, and it should always be about service in a hotel. And they began to neglect the employees a little bit, and so the employees started striking back.
Was this a group that was New York-based, or were they from out of town? Because so many hotels these days are owned by foreign businesses.
Yeah, usually it was a private equity fund. And, you know, sometimes you have someone who owns the building, and then you have a management company, and that can be even a larger hospitality company. In this situation, it was a money company that came in and wanted to flip it, but they really didn't know anything about hospitality.
So where did you start in the New York hotel?
I started at front desk. And I stayed there. I did some housekeeping work when I was in New Orleans, but I just rocked that front desk for a solid 7 years here.
The front desk is a prestigious job, right? Could you have started as a bellman? Is a bellman a better job or is a worse job?
Bellman's a wonderful job, especially financially. It can be very lucrative, but it is also, you know, it's difficult physically. But so is the front desk.
But people don't tip you at the front desk.
See, the thing is that there, it's an undervalued position, and a lot of people are tipping in the hotels, but they don't realize that the front desk agent has a huge amount of power. We're the ones on the keyboard, and we can improve your life with a keystroke.
Well, along those lines, let's take a call from Eric from Harding, New Jersey. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Frequent flyer to Spain because of family. I've learned some techniques on how to get bumped up on the airlines. How do you get bumped up on rooms and not having to pay for it? Are there any techniques, and does that exist?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one simple tactic if you want to avoid getting money involved, first of all, kindness and calling ahead and establishing a contact at the hotel with the front desk. That way, when you arrive, someone's already aware of your name and you have their name, and you have basically a friend to start off with. That can improve your room. But actually, gratuity, a small gratuity to the front desk can change everything. We have to upgrade. You have 100 rooms in a hotel and all of the normal rooms are booked. Somebody's going to get upgraded in certain situations, and dealing with the front desk agent correctly can get that done for you.
And you say dealing with the front desk agent correctly means be nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's 1,000 ways. You know, don't be on your cell phone. Don't snap your credit card at me. Maybe don't use my name too quickly. You know, that used to be a pet peeve of mine. Someone would just walk up and be like, "Hey, Jake." And I'm like, "Well, get to know me a little bit first before you throw my name at me." It made me feel insubordinate.
But that's a culture difference. There are people from out of town who are more likely to call you by your name immediately, aren't they?
Sure, I think so. But, I feel as a general rule, anyone out there wearing a name tag doesn't necessarily want you to use their name. It's there. It's there if you need it. But to overly use it can come off insulting.
You mentioned celebrities. Do they have a different attitude?
Yeah, they run the gamut. I mean, I've got crazy stories from divas that want everything in the room white. If there's a different color throw pillow, you get that out of there. Blacking out the rooms, weird requests at odd hours. And then you've got celebrities that are just incredibly calm and down to earth and just wonderful people. So you really never know.
My guest is Jacob Tomsky. His book, Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. You say that one of the biggest lies a hotel desk clerk will tell a guest is that all rooms are the same.
Absolutely.
How big a difference is there?
There's quite a bit. I mean, you look at the building, it's not going to be a square situation, you know, with plumbing and everything. There's always a room that has a bigger bathroom with two sinks. There's always a room that has a bigger closet. And the front desk agent and the bellman are going to have intimate knowledge of this property. And so there's always something that can be done there.
And then if you're given room 1212, you know that you really have done something wrong?
Yeah, that's definitely New York specific. I learned that after a while. When you check in, as a punishment.
Yeah, it's 1212.
1212, yeah, because, if you're a little bit rude, I might put you in 1212. And then what happens, you have people throughout the hotel who still, for some reason, don't know to dial out. So they'll pick up the phone to dial a local number and dial 1212. And so then 1212's phone rings all day, all night with people who have no idea how to dial out. So.
Well, can't that be fixed?
No. I mean, how do
you... Well, first of all, you can have a room. You could just eliminate the room, 1212.
Yeah.
Many buildings eliminate the 13th floor.
Hotels do not have 13th floors, absolutely. Yeah, and then that would go for any area code.
Right.
Anywhere you could put a 1 in
1213 would still get you L.A., right?
Yeah, there you go.
What about a key bomb?
Yeah. I think I invented that, although I'm waiting for another front desk agent to step out and say they've done this one. It's a... It's sort of an inventive way to jam up a guest as far as his keys. Basically, when you, I should provide you with initial keys, and you would get two of the same keys. When you put it in the door, everything's fine. But when I would key bomb them, and this was something that could be requested, perhaps a bellman would say, hey, key bomb him. I would take an initial key, and then I would make a second initial key. So when you go up, you're going to get in your room. You go inside, you put the first key in, you're fine. Eventually, you're going to bring the second key out. And when you put that in, it's going to reprogram the lock. So now your first key is inactive. So eventually, if you stretch that out over a day or two, you're going to be battling that red light and coming back down to me, and you're going to have no idea what happened and never trace back to me.
And why would the bellman do that to you? Ask you to do that because he hadn't been tipped?
Yeah. I mean, or, you know, if you say something, you know, like racist or homophobic to the cab driver, or you're yelling at people, or, you know what I mean? Or not gratuity. Sometimes, you know, Red Sox fans, you know, it's, you know, indiscriminate.
Now, what happens if you book through an outside source? For example, if you book an airline ticket, they also ask you if you want a hotel, you'll save money. Mm-hmm. Or if you book through somebody, some of the various outside parties like Expedia.
Sure.
Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Yeah, I speak about that in Heads of Beds. It's a good thing because you do save a lot on the rate since they purchase in bulk. But now you've sort of entered your name into a pool of a huge mass. And so your reservation is going to be very stripped down when it comes to the hotel. And, you know, obviously the hotel is going to take priority for people that chose their hotel because they like the hotel and they're paying the full rate. So they're going to have priority, but there are ways around that. And probably the best way is, again, to call ahead. Book your reservation however you'd like, but then call the property directly. And you got to watch out because sometimes it'll be central reservations. But find the property number, talk to the front desk. They're going to tell you exactly what you booked and exactly what you can get. And at that point, you draw yourself out from the masses and you become an individual. And that's the best thing you can do to ensure you get your requests.
So it's just a matter of establishing yourself as somebody who is unique.
Absolutely. And just making a connection. It's invaluable in the hotel. Absolutely.
Well, that only would extend to a few people, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, if all these Travelocity reservations come through, and I've got 35 Travelocity reservations, most of the requests are going to stay requests. But when you call and you call in advance, the front desk agent is able to make those guarantees, and they know the property specifically. You know, there might be offers for corner rooms on Expedia, but you don't know what the hotel is like.
And then what happens when somebody comes and says, I have a reservation, and it doesn't come up on your computer?
Oh, like that happens every day. Sometimes they start screaming. Sometimes they bring out way too much paperwork and start throwing that at me. I mean, anything can happen when a guest walks into a lobby and when they don't get what they want. It's phenomenal, the things I've seen.
Well, whose fault is it?
Well, sometimes the Expedia reservations, like if you're talking about that, they don't drop down. Usually they drop down in bulk. So if you book that on your phone on the way, sometimes it takes a while for those to process because that's a payment situation where Expedia has to contact the hotel and set up that situation. So, you know, reservations are inappropriately canceled, you know, through human error, you know, someone's name sounding like someone else's name.
A listener asks, what's the best way to give a gratuity?
Well, that's, you know, it's honestly, it's not a drug deal. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of times I've been handed like a 20 folded up all tiny in an awkward little handshake, which I call a crinkly handshake, which is a nice thing. But it's really, you know, if you've ever seen somebody next to you tip, they look really good doing it. It's a good look. And, you know, front desk especially, you know, you're going to look kind. They're going to appreciate it. And we handle money all the time. So it's going to look like you're asking for change, if anything.
On the other hand, people are concerned about what is considered a reasonable tip. So you can tip somebody and still worry that the person will think you're being cheap.
Sure. You know, for when you're talking bellman and doorman, I think bottom line, $2 a bag, start there. And then again, nothing less than $5. I don't think at this day and age anybody should be offering less than $5 for that. But
and what about leaving a tip in the room?
Oh, for the maid.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people tip at the end. And one of the things that I suggest you do is actually, first of all, no matter what, put it in an envelope and write housekeeping on it. And there'll usually be envelopes in the room because there's a lot. When you check out, there's a lot of people that are going into that room. You got engineering going to that room. You got minibar restocking that room. So it's important that you get it to the housekeeper. And at the end, it's checked out. So everybody's going in. So tipping at the up front is a good idea. Like when you check in, if you got a couple days stay, put some money in the envelope, write housekeeping, take care of it immediately.
My guest is Jacob Tomsky. His book, Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. It is published by Doubleday. And we will take a little break, and we'll come back with more. You're invited to give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Jacob Tomsky, who's written about his experience in the hospitality business and a new book from Doubleday called Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. And we are inviting your calls in case you have questions about hotel etiquette and also want to share some experiences that might teach us all some lessons. You can call us at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And a listener, Renee from Greenwich, says, I grew up in Asia, Hong Kong, Indonesia, and Thailand. My mother trained hotel and airline staff in service and etiquette. Hospitality and service in Asia is head and shoulders above what is available in the West. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on how culture informs standards and ideas of hospitality.
Absolutely. I think, you know, you had asked earlier if it was the front desk was a position that had, you know, some respect attached to it. And I think that's quite a bit less common in America. It's more of you're performing a function here. You know, it's often even performed by computers these days. There's automatic check-in machines. So I think there's more of a history and more of a love for it, especially when you come to the concierge department and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a little bit more respected. There are companies in America that train their employees properly and on service, and I was lucky enough to receive that. But it definitely does vary service.
Would it be better if I went to a hotel that was owned by some Asian company, or would New York be New York and
I would
New
think
Orleans
so.
Be
even,
New Orleans?
You know, it's all culturally as well. It's like, you know, you're still training the same people, and you can only train, you know, Americans so far, perhaps.
We really are lugs, aren't we? Meg from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. One of my clients came into a hotel from California late at night to Baltimore, big trade event. And when he came up to his room, he went downstairs again to the big crowded lobby and said to the clerk, there's no bed in my room. And the clerk very quickly said, when you made the reservation, did you require a bed?
Wow.
Everyone in the lobby just broke up. Anyway.
So what happened? Did they give him a cot?
They rolled in a little bed for him, some kind of a thing on wheels, I guess, a cot.
Yeah, rollaways.
That was it.
Now, if that was a situation you had to handle, would you have been able to give that person a discount?
Yeah, I would think at that point, or try to give them an upgrade. I mean, there's actually reasons why bedwoods would be removed from rooms. Sometimes they have shows in there, like shoe shows and stuff like that, and presentations. Sometimes they're used for storage. So I could see that happening, but of course that should have been noted in the system, and you should never have sent a guest there. But at that point, absolutely. Then it's damage control.
Let's take another call. John from Queens. Boy, this is a bad connection, John. Okay, John, are you there? Okay, well, we'll speak to him later. Jesse in Hell's Kitchen asks, how do you reach the front desk when you call down and the operator says the front desk doesn't take calls?
I think the best way to reach that front desk would maybe be to move to another hotel that gives you access to the front desk. That's a little strange, unless there are situations where front desk agents are also trained as operators. I was in that position as well, and that's good because you can take everything from the point of contact. So it's possible that the operator is actually a trained front desk agent, and they can take care of all your needs. But otherwise, there should be no reason you shouldn't have access to the front desk. And then go downstairs immediately then.
John from Paramus, how are you on the air?
It's also annoying when you dial for the front desk and you get a busy signal. I could never figure that out either.
Yeah.
Is it true that if you tip the bellman a little bit better, he can get you a better room?
You know, that I think that's one of the points that I make, in Heads and Beds, is that what he's going to do is immediately come to the front desk because the bellman doesn't even have a login for the system. So the first thing he's going to come do is ask for a favor from the front desk. So in a way, you're kind of going at the middleman there. And sometimes it's better to direct a gratuity. I mean, certainly don't neglect to tip the bellman, but I think the front desk has been undervalued. And I think a gratuity directed at them is going to do you well.
Well, judging from your book, bellmen sound like an eccentric group.
Yeah.
It seemed like they're really, really good to party with.
Yeah.
What kinds of skills are necessary to be an above-average bellman?
Well, I mean, you know, the ability to deal with all kinds of people. You know, they've dealt with everyone. You know, one of the first questions they're ever going to ask you is, you know, where are you coming in from? And then they're going to want to start a conversation. They're great at remembering names, remembering faces, so that the next time you come back, a great bellman's going to be like, you know, Mr. Lopate, welcome back. Pleasure to have you. And then you're going to feel at home. So it's their job as sort of roaming ambassadors. So it does take quite a bit of people skills to be a great bellman.
Why do you curse the inventor of the rolling suitcase several times in this book?
Because I think that was a huge shift in the life of the bellman. Before then, they were a provider of ease and comfort. They were a necessity because you've got these big bags. You can't get them up to your room without using the cart. And then once that's the wheeled suitcase was invented, everyone, you know, they can handle it themselves. I don't need any help. You know, it's physics has eliminated your position
from
life.
You're making me feel so guilty.
Sorry.
Well, you were also a housekeeping manager for a while?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw some of the craziest stuff. That was one of the most interesting positions I held in the hotel.
When you were working there, you learned some room cleaning secrets straight from the experts. What's the strangest cleaning tip you learned?
Well, probably the minibar glasses. You know, those are kept in the room. And if you look at a housekeeper's cart, you're not going to see dish soap. So they usually have to clean it with what they have available. So sometimes they'll put hot water in the sink and shampoo and just leave them to soak, cleaning them with shampoo. Sometimes they're going to use the rag that they used with Pledge on it, because you'd be surprised that Pledge, it's going to make your mirror look clean with spotless. It's also going to make your glass look clean and spotless. It'll just give it a little lemon kick.
So you're suggesting that we rinse out that glass.
Rinse out that glass.
On our own.
Rinse it out. Rinse it out, definitely.
You also tell us to steal. I'm not so sure I feel comfortable that we can take stuff from the mini bar and get away with it.
I do not recommend that you steal. That is a fact that you can steal. You know, it's like if you shake up a Sprite bottle, it's going to explode. I'm not saying you do that. I'm just saying that's what happens if you do that. So I myself do not steal.
Well, how can you steal from the minibar?
Well, the minibar is the most fallible system in the hotel for years, back when they used to call it the honor bar. It's been a struggle since the beginning of time to get those charges correct. So as a front desk agent, I removed just hundreds and hundreds of charges daily. So in fact, you know, it's such a mischarged item that if you do indulge yourself in the minibar, then and you come down and you say, you know what, I never had the minibar, it's going to get removed. They're not going to accuse you of lying. They're not going to go through your trash looking for M&M wrappers. So that's just one fact of the industry, that it is you are able to sort of indulge and get away with it if you're morally flexible.
My guest is Jacob Tomsky. His book, Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. It's published by Doubleday. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I think it was Philip Galanis who got a letter some weeks back from somebody who was very proud of the fact that she never bought shampoo or conditioner because between her visits to hotels and friends' visits to hotels, she never had to.
Yeah.
There are people who are very confused about whether you should take those things or not.
Oh, no, those are included in the price of the room. Those conveniences are available. And if, you know, the slippers, you know, there's a lot of little things, shoehorns hotels have.
What about the robe? I like
the robes, those. You know, like
not
that I'm recommending. You can also do that, though, because there's a lot of times that you check in and there's no robe in your room. So you're going to call down and ask for another robe, right? But what if there wasn't a robe in your room? What if there was one and now it's in your bag? No one's going to know. But especially those little items, if you like the shampoo, call the front desk, call housekeeping and say, you know what, can I have 5 more bottles of shampoo? That's their job. We have so many of that stuff. That's definitely your right to enjoy and take.
So I could use it and then put it in my bag and then expect it to be replaced.
Yeah. Or you can call down and ask for more. I'm in no position to judge that you shampoo with 5 bottles, like you just cover yourself in shampoo. I'm not gonna assume you don't do that. So if you ask for 5 bottles of shampoo, they're gonna send you 5 bottles of shampoo.
Dina from the West Side, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hi. I just survived a war in Israel last week when Hamas was firing down rockets in Tel Aviv, where I was staying at a hotel on the beach. Before I arrived at the hotel, I called the manager to make sure it was safe, and she said people were still hanging out on the beach. So when I arrived at the hotel, I specifically requested that the front desk put me in contact with the manager to show me the bomb shelter. I was petrified. And so he showed me the bomb shelter, and an hour after I checked into my room, the sirens went off, and we all had to run. We had 90 seconds to run to the bomb shelter, only to find that the bomb shelter was locked. And we were just outraged. We didn't understand it, and no one else had requested, like I did, to see the bomb shelter. So they didn't know that it was okay to stand by the staircase, and they claimed that the staircase was the safest place to stay. Now, the day after, just by coincidence, I ran into that same manager. I said, "What happened yesterday? The bomb shelter was locked. We were petrified." Oh, he said, "I'm so sorry. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. But today we promised it will be open the whole day." Then, a few days later, they had that bombing of the Israeli bus, also in Tel Aviv, and they were closing all the hallway doors. So if I had 90 seconds to run down to the bomb shelter, I had to fight that door. And I asked
What is your point here, Dina? That Israeli hotels aren't as good as New York hotels, or
no,
that?
My point is they were fabulous in their service. Okay, but I'm trying to get to the point where.
Well, please do.
Okay, at the front desk, when I asked for them to close the door. Okay, I mean to open the door, so I would have easy access. You know, to say this is serious. You know, to save one's life, they kept the door closed like three or four times when I tried to exit.
I always keep the door open.
Yeah, but I guess this is miscommunication.
Yeah, I mean, all facilities, whether they be the spa or the bomb shelter, should be available to.
No, New York hotels and New Orleans hotels don't have bomb shelters.
No,
we should have hurricane shelters, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. It does seem
the
yeah,
two
we,
cities
they have
seem
that
to
in
have
common now. They have that in common now.
Somebody else asks, can you make up for a bad first impression when it comes to the hotel staff? Will a tip help? And another one wants to know, you suggested that you might tip every day or even at the end of a stay. How much should we consider a typical tip for each day we've been there?
Well, if you're talking about housekeeping, I would always tip up front. You know, it goes back to the origins, you know, to ensure proper service. You want to do that up front so you can ensure that happening. Very important. And then what was the first part of that question?
Can you make up for a bad impression?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, there's this phrase that the bellman used. I'd get screamed at by this guest, and then I'd be like, "What's the deal with this guy?" And they'd come down, they'd say, "He's a really nice guy." And all that meant is that he was generous. So, yeah, you can be rude. You just have to be generous.
Now, you also tell stories here about people, staff having sex in rooms and such. What happens if you walk into a room that you have just been given the key to and you find one of the bellmen and one of the maids in your bed?
Yeah, I would.
Or if you find a bed that looks like it has been used, even though you are
supposed to be the first person to use it. Yeah, anything you can think of going on in a hotel room goes on in a hotel room. So, yeah, if you get into a room and the bedspread looks ruffled at all, ask for it to be refreshed, or even better, ask for another room. And that might also be a good opportunity to ask for an upgrade, or you know what I mean? You should not be put in that situation. Unfortunately, we have master keys. So, and there's even married couples that work together at hotels. So, you know, anything can happen. So it's good to take a look around.
Well, how often are hotels fully booked?
Well, as much as they can. They like to overbook. They like to book to 110% because there's a 10% no-show ratio. People cancel the last day or just don't show up at all. So they like to overbook and play the numbers game, and it doesn't always work. And in that case, someone gets walked to another hotel. But, they would – if any hotelier would want to have their hotel head in every bed every single night is the ideal game there.
Kat from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I've found, ironically, that some of the larger hotel chains and brands will charge a very high fee for a daily Wi-Fi plan. Some of the smaller boutique hotels that I've stayed in, both luxury and less luxury, will often offer that for free. And it seems insulting to be paying $500 a night for a hotel room, or even $200 a night, and then be charged anywhere between $10 and $20 just to have internet. My in addition to my complaint, I have a question, which is how do you avoid that? How do you get an upgrade to get free wireless? And in my experience, I know sometimes you can join their sort of frequent traveler program and get this fee waived, but any other points? And also, what is the purpose of this sort of insulting fee when we all know how readily available internet really
is? Well, sadly, that's one of hotels' master hustles. I mean, these little charges, I always recommend looking at your bill. There's tiny little charges that get tacked on. You may have, they may offer you a rollaway, and then all of a sudden there's a charge for the rollaway. So always review your bill. And I couldn't agree with you more that internet should be free. But
it seems to me that they know that most of the people who are using those hotels are doing it on expense accounts. And so you can nickel and dime them in a way that somebody who's paying $60 a night at a Comfort Inn might not really want to pay.
Absolutely. And then just honestly, it is a bit of an outrage. And expressing that, you know, saying that at check-in, like if there's a charge for the internet, you know what, I really don't agree with that. And I think it should be provided. And, you know, my rate is kind of, I'd really like to have that taken care of. It would make me feel much more comfortable staying at this hotel. And I honestly, I think that would do a good job towards getting that waived.
Didn't work for me at the Trump. Muriel on Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. This was a few years ago when they changed from hotel keys to the plastic cards and arrived at the Albany Marriott about 1 o'clock in the morning and were given the plastic cards and went up and opened the room, turned on the light, and two people jumped out of bed, and we woke them up, and if they had a gun, I think they might have shot us. Went back down to the desk. The desk clerk, the night clerk, thought it was hysterically funny and gave us another set of plastic keys, and we got in a room. The next morning, I went downstairs and reported to a new desk clerk what had happened, and he said, oh, the people that you woke up and got out of bed have already reported this. It's already written down. 2 weeks later, Betsy Wade from the New York Times wrote an article about the change from the keys to the plastic cards and how revolutionary this was, and Marriott was a leader in this new movement, and wasn't it great? And I wrote to her, and I said, no, it isn't great, and relayed the story of how we woke the people up in the middle of the night and so forth and so on. That letter was published in the New York Times.
We're running out of time.
She then heard from the manager of the Albany Marriott, who said that never happened, said I was a liar. This was impossible.
Well, I would say two things with that would be that, number one, these keys are reprogrammed again and again. So their charge is very weak. But also, you know, I've made simple errors. You put the wrong number on a key packet. I'm checking in 500 guests a day. I meant to send you to 1711, and I put 1717. So it could have been just a simple human error. We deal with quite a bit. So,
although if he sent you to 1212 in a New York hotel, you should really feel insulted. So what are you doing now? Are you still working in hotels?
No. Professional writer, happy to say. It was a long journey. I'm just very happy to be here and, keep going.
We thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you, Jacob Tomsky, T-O-M-S-K-Y.
His book, Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. It's published by Doubleday.